Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Network. In this bumper interview special, we're joined by the cast and crew of Waves, the third A24 film from Trey Edward Schultz. The film will be in UK cinemas from Friday, January 17th, and this was one of the highlights of the year for me, and these interviews are from the morning of the UK premiere at the London Film Festival last October. Waves traces the journey of a suburban family led by a well-intentioned but domineering father as they navigate love, forgiveness and coming together in the aftermath of a loss. In this first interview segment, I'm joined by the film's writer-director, Trey Edward Schultz. In the second, and I cannot stress this highly enough, I'm joined by the cast who discuss elements of the film that are huge spoilers. So watch the film, then dive back in. In this segment, I'm joined by Sterling K. Brown, Renee Elsie Goldsberry, Kelvin Harrison Jr. and Taylor Russell. And in the final interview segment, there's an extract from an earlier interview episode with Krisha Fairchild, who discusses her minor role in the film. Hope you enjoy the discussion in this episode, and be sure to catch Waves in the UK cinemas from Friday. I will always love you. I read that sort of the idea for Waves has been kicking around a decade. When was the moment that you realised you could actually make this your third feature?
That's a great question. I think really when I was making my last film, It Comes at Night, they're also very different. And I think I was craving a movie like Waves, and it was all sort of starting to come together more at that time. So I even remember like when we made Night, the Frank Ocean's Endless and Blonde had come out, and like driving around on weekends to waterholes and dreaming about making Waves. So it was around that time.
Obviously, the film in that kind of period of time hasn't taken much iterations. I remember at one point there was like a rumor that this was going to be a musical.
Yeah.
I would love to see a Trey Edward Schultz musical first. Like, at what point did that all sort of come together that this would be the form it would take in terms of this sort of big two-act structure?
Long time. This has sort of been embedded in the DNA for many, many years. I think around 2011... maybe 2012 was when the epiphany of the two-act structure, brother and sister thing clicked into space, but it was never meant to be a musical. I think someone just reported it wrong and it got spread out and everything. But yeah, it was always that structure and sort of kind of like a soundtrack-based film, you know, in the vein of old movies I love, like Boogie Nights and Dazed and Confused and Goodfellas.
Yeah. I'd read that this is like an incredibly personal film for you, and that seems to be a trend with your films. I think like Krisha, for example, which I absolutely love. I mean, I didn't think, there couldn't be a more personal film than this. Film with your family, shooting with your family. I actually recently interviewed her herself. What was that like to sort of invest yourself in this script on a personal level and to shoot it? And is it a cathartic experience to write it, film it, and then how do you feel afterwards when you see something so personal to you on screen?
It was very cathartic writing it, making it. I think also because Krisha was extremely personal, but it was more taking from family members, you know, that had suffered with addiction that we were very close with, and recreating things. And this was probably more like a film that's like purely me as a human, where I'm at as a human being right now in all these different capacities, and a lot of autobiographical things from my life. Incredibly cathartic, amazing experience, best of my life, but releasing it has been weird because it's almost like, I don't know, it's just very surreal. Like, whoa, now people are actually seeing this and it's not mine anymore, so.
Obviously, you reunite with Kelvin Harrison Jr., who was in It Comes at Night. Man. Was he always the person you had in mind for that kind of role? And what was the process of developing this character and the script?
It was as soon as I hadn't met him until It Comes at Night, when he auditioned for that and got cast in that, and we hit it off like crazy. And we continually gotten closer and closer. And I remember as soon as we started working together, I was like, oh shit, what if... You know, he could be, there's a lot of roles in Waves, and there's one particular role I think he'd be amazing at. And then it sort of started there, and we started talking about things. And even before I sent him a first draft, I was texting him, asking a lot of personal stuff in his life. And And it really evolved from there. He got the first draft of his script probably 8 months before we shot.
Yeah.
And we were collaborating a lot on Tyler and his family and the nuance of that family. And a lot of it was sort of finding a commonality between both of our experiences, you know? So like as personal as everything is in this movie, we would siphon from personal stuff in Kelvin's life and like mm-hmm. come together on stuff. Like really a lot of the dynamic between Tyler and his dad in the film. First, it was between myself and my dad and stepdad, but then it became a lot about the commonality with Kelvin and his dad as well, and how he pushed him with music instead of wrestling. And so it really went pretty dense into all of that, and it really led off with Kelvin. And then as other cast members came, that sort of collaboration continued with everyone.
What was that like bringing this cast together? Because it's such a fantastic cast that you've got here. How did you bring all these people together and develop this really interesting family dynamic between them?
It was amazing. You know, just a mix of like standard casting and not at times, you know, a lot of it, you know, it totally varied. Kelvin was attached forever. Sterling, you know, we just sent him the script and had a phone call. Then he met Kelvin, Taylor, Alexa, like actually auditioned. And then we FaceTimed and the kids would meet each other in LA and everything. It was amazing. Really all I care about is like finding incredible human beings that are crazy talented and that we just connect with. So I just felt like the luckiest dude in the world when we were filming, because they blow me away every day.
Obviously, I'm not going to go into any kind of spoilers, but with the film, it has this clear two-act kind of structure and parts. And that first half is just so incredibly intense. Was there ever worry that for how our audience is going to react when there's this sudden change? Do you feel, you know, I know the audience of people that will come see my films, they will trust me and go along with this. Was there ever any worries that there'll be a whiplash and people are like, oh, the film's ended, and it continues on? Well, was there any worries about that and stuff?
Totally. I mean, that was something we always talked about just in the DNA of it. Like, is this going to work? I mean, the climax of the movie is halfway through. Mm-hmm. And then we completely switch perspectives and go on a totally different journey and tonal journey. We always had the big theory, like, if it would work for people, it would be who that girl is that's Emily. And if you can switch with her and be mm-hmm. compelled by her in this new journey, kind of. And for me, it's always been very curious for people to see the movie twice too, because like I've seen it a million times, but it's like a lot of the real heart and soul of the movie are in part two.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I just hope people can really go with it, because the people that do, it seems very rewarding. It's almost like, I kind of like thinking of it like if you feel like you have a panic attack and then the movie gives you a hug for a while, you know, and you get to the other side of that panic attack, I guess.
Definitely. I mean, I think one of the things that's been so prominent from your three films and your short is that you can shoot tension amongst families so well to almost a suffocating level. What's that? How do you sort of do that so well in the script? And obviously you've edited this film as well. What's your magic touch to create that?
It's a good question. I'm not quite sure. I think it's just that the movies are very personal, and I feel like I've lived them in a lot of ways, or my loved ones have lived them, and I just feel like I know it, and I love film, and I love film grammar. So it's just like putting that emotion into the filmmaking, if that makes sense, you know. And like especially this movie in Cretia felt like sort of subjective first person immersive experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, for this one, first it's Tyler and then it's Emily, but everything we see and feel is through those characters. And I think if you do that honestly, then I, you know, Tyler has a very intense journey. So if we capture that honestly and with a specific kind of film language, I think it leads to the experience you feel, you know.
This is obviously, you've been on somewhat of a journey yourself. This is your third film with A24. You've gone from Cretia, like family home, shooting with family and friends, to something like this kind of sprawling epic and stuff. I think I saw someone compare it to almost like A24's version of Magnolia. What's that journey been like for you over those three films, as you've sort of evolved and everything's continued to refine and more money perhaps coming to you, you know, big names getting involved in your project? What's that been like for you as a journey, and does it give you opportunities to make, are these the type of films you always wanted to make, or is it kind of part of the evolution?
Yeah, it's a good question, man. It, for me, it's been really incredible. I think because we made Cretia in such a unique way, and that was such an incredible experience, it was, for me, it was just figuring out how do we continue that as we're evolving and things are getting bigger. It, like for this movie, you know, I went from first two movies, almost a single location for the entire films, to over 50 locations in like 35 days, half of that in cars. I'd shot in a car one time for a brief scene before this. It was just, it was incredible though, because, you know, it's like, I talked about the approach with the cast and how, so like that, some of the main collaborators, we just love each other. It feels like a family, but that approach is the same way with the crew, and I'm working with some of the same people I started out with on Cretia. So it really just feels like a big family. I feel like making this has been the Waves is the best shoot in my life so far, and we all kind of feel like, how are we ever going to top it? So yeah, it's been really amazing.
One thing that caught me early in the film when I was watching the credits was you've got a colorist in there. Usually that's like banished to like the mid credits. No one ever notices it.
Yeah,
I love the visual look of this film and stuff. How was that sort of came together in that collaboration? And obviously that's someone that you've got front and center. I forgot their name. How did that sort of look for the film come to be?
Well, Damo, we're very close with. He colored our last film, It Comes at Night, as well. And Drew, who shot it, has shot all of my movies. The visual look, it started with the script and just grew and grew from there. I mean, in the script, you know, camera movement was talked about, aspect ratios were talked about, literally using different colors and fonts for different parts of the movie. And we're shooting in Florida, one of the most beautiful places to me. So, it was pretty much embedded in there and just continued and continued. And, you know, we shot it as a very, subjective, immersive experience. And Drew played with color a lot. It was a lot of fun. And Damo, or us working with Damo, we feel like he just brought it to the next level. You know, it's, one of my, highly valued collaborations.
One of your new collaborators on this film is Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. How did they sort of come to be involved in this film, and what was that process like for scoring this film? Because it's such a beautiful score that you've got
here.
Thank
you so much. It was really amazing. One of the coolest emails of my life. I got an email that Trent Reznor wants to meet me, and I went out to LA and had lunch with him and Atticus, and we all just hit it off. They seemed to like really dig my last two movies. Wanted to work together, and I believe I was writing Waves at the time, actually, and I was like, I got something for you soon, and I sent it to them, and they loved it, and it was really incredible. And I think at first they were really, because like the soundtrack was in the script too, so you could play music as you're listening, so I was a little bit like, what are these incredible composers gonna think when they get a script with like 50 soundtrack songs? And they're like, where do we fit into this? But they weren't turned off by that. They were super excited by that, and how does score differentiate the soundtrack, and where do we fit in there? And I think the thing, you know, we did some trial and error and experimentation along the way, but I think we really came, what we landed on is a kind of, we feel like the score is very internal for Tyler and then Emily. And subjective to their experience, again, like they would take sounds from the movie and fuse those and combine those with musical elements. And I think a lot of the heart and kind of spirit of the movie is in their score and melody and themes at times, because there's so much other existing music. That's what like links and everything and connects everything together. So it was really amazing.
What was the editing process like for this as well? You're the editor, not just writer, director, you get an editing role as well. Is that sort of part of that control of, you know, this is something that's so personal to you and making sure that it's brought to life in the best way? What's it like editing your own work, and do you have a critical eye for yourself when you're doing anything? Oh my God, what was that guy thinking with that short? How do you sort of edit yourself?
It's very fun. It gets hard at the time. For this one, this was easily the hardest thing I've ever edited, because we had enough material for a 4-hour movie, literally two 2-hour movies. Yeah. And I edited alone for almost 7 months, just on my laptop in Florida. And it was simultaneously the most exhilarating, amazing thing I'd ever done, and the hardest that, you know, after editing for months on end, and I don't really do an assembly, I just like edit in real time as I'm going, and then getting to like, it was hard, but I think it is, it's how I start. Like, Krisha, I was the only editor. Mm-hmm. All my shorts before that, I was the only editor. I grew up like filming my family and editing those into videos, so it's like the most intimate thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like just being alone, locked in a room with only my hands on the keyboards, I feel like I know every square inch of all the footage, everything mm-hmm. that's in the movie and all the possibilities. And also I just get to literally experience it firsthand again, you know, just like when I'm first writing, it's just on a laptop and going through. So it's really amazing. I'm going through like long benders and crying like a baby and doing all and experimenting, and it's really amazing. But then after 7 months alone, you lose your mind. And then I brought in Isaac Hagee, my man, and we reined it in and got it down to a digestible like 215 movie. But yeah, it was great.
What's the marketing process now like for this film? Because I remember watching the trailer, like for when the trailers come out, I watch it once, don't want to see it again until the film. And then I remember going into the film going, this wasn't the film I expected at all, not in a negative way. And then I was like, you know, I'm going to go back and visit that trailer. How did I maybe think it was going to be something different? And it's one of those ones, like, I think it's so great. I just watched it before we did this interview, just to go get myself in the head, say, how are they putting this film out there?
Yeah.
Is it a difficult one? Because what makes this film really so great is so much of it is hidden and secret. And now the film is going out into the world, and there'll be conversations, there'll be think pieces online, blah, blah, blah. And how does these people navigate talking about the film but not ruining what makes this film so special and unique, and that structure as well that you've worked so hard on?
Totally. I mean, it's been really hard, and that's what we struggled with marketing and everything. And I'd say the trailer that's out there now hopefully captures sort of the spirit and soul of the overall movie, especially after you get through the end of part two and everything. Probably does not prepare you for a lot of things that happen. But then it's good too, we're going to have a new trailer soon that plays more with different tonal sides of the movie as well. I don't know, man, it's been interesting. Yeah. The big, big thing though that we always talked about is not like how do we get people intrigued and interested and feeling tonally true to the movie without spoiling what exactly it is and where all it goes. So I feel really good about that so far, that we haven't spoiled anything.
Do you feel a lot of these interviews are people going to be dancing around things going, so wink, wink, you know, this part here?
A few times already, it's like, you know, when the thing happens, but we can't. So it's been interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah. And obviously, this is your last part of your like three deal thing that you had with A24. Is that going to kind of continue on? Because you seem like really good collaborators, and I'd heard a story about how you first discovered that you wanted A24 pick up Krisha. That was your goal and stuff like that. Is that relationship going to continue? Because you seem to be making great films together, or will it just be naturally kind of moving on to something?
I mean, I hope so. I have no idea. I'm basically, this is the first time creatively I feel like I'm now at a blank slate. After making Krisha, I was pretty much working nonstop to make It Comes at Night, then make Waves, and it was always like the next thing. And it kind of felt like they were all just leading to Waves, if that makes sense. And that was the first time we got to sort of play with every tool and flex every muscle that we had gone through to lead to that. And I just feel like I put all my everything creatively as a human being into this movie right now. So now I'm like a blank slate. Yeah. I have no idea what's next. Need to get away, you know, after we do press and stuff. Hopefully I can take some time off if it's okay financially, and then, figure out.
Perfect. We might see the Trey Edward Schultz musical after all.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, one of the best rumors. I like the fact it's even in IMDb trivia, like, long suspected to be a musical.
All of it. I believe that's all because someone heard about the local casting in Florida and then heard music was in the movie, so reported it wrong.
People were talking in the press line, I've heard this is going to be a musical and stuff like that, so it's going to be interesting to see it go through.
People do sing in the movie.
Yeah.
They sing with songs, so maybe it's as close.
There's going to be an absolutely banging Spotify playlist of this movie, I think.
I hope so.
Well, thank you so much. Honestly, this film has been such a treat, and I can't wait to see how people like react to the film. How have people, obviously it's compressed so far, they've probably most seen it. What are you hoping people are going to maybe get from this film?
Good question, man. Honestly, I hope they stick with the whole journey, go through the other side emotionally, and I hope you come out on the other end feeling it's a very human and empathetic film. For everything it goes through. And I hope it hits you in your gut a bit and connects with you emotionally, feels human, empathetic, and makes you think about some things, and hopefully it makes you think about your loved ones, and who knows, you know.
Perfect. Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure. Kelvin, this is your second time with Trey. When did you sort of get involved in this project? When did you first sort of hear about this exciting role?
Almost a year before we started shooting. Trey had mentioned it, like, at the end of It Comes at Night. He was like, I'm going to do my version of a high school movie. And I was like, cool, put me in. And he was like, maybe. almost a year after that, he started writing it. And he was telling me, like, the idea of what, you know, the two parts of the story, which part do you want to play? And he told me about the wrestler and a boyfriend character. Mm-hmm. So... I was like, I want the harder role, the athletic role, because I'm not athletic, so...
Hey, I don't want like to hear that. He's very athletic.
Oh, trust me.
Very.
We played pool the other day, and...
It's not athletic, that's pool. Pool is not billiards.
That's like saying darts is like
a sport.
Yeah,
you know
what I'm saying? It's finger workout.
You're good.
I know nothing about sports, as you can see. I just call pool a sport. Anyway... so he did that, and then we started collaborating and texting and talking to each other for about a year about the script, and then suddenly we were in Florida.
When I see the film the next time, I'm going to have a hard image of Lucas Hedges now being replaced with you. Imagine that whole time.
I'm trying to think about that too. Weird.
So, obviously...
we might not be here. Definitely not.
So you picked that second kind of the role, the lead. What was it like? Because Tyler is such a challenging character. He makes so many decisions that... You're watching, you're thinking, like, you know, oh, why is he doing that? What's kind of gone down that way? Is it difficult to sort of take on a role like that where you know the audience is going to be struggling to maybe match up with what you're doing? You know, for example, you get this advice, you shouldn't be continuing with the sport. You continue to do it on, and we feel those punches extra harder. What's it like sort of taking that on and knowing the audience might be, you know, resistant to what's going on?
That was part of the challenge that I loved about the role, was like talking to Trey and finding this through line between our upbringings and the pressures we received from our father, and just really finding the layers of what this young man was. He loved his dad, and he had looked up to his dad. He's an icon. He loved his mother, and you know, he loved his girlfriend. That was his best friend. So it was finding all those different colors and trying to show his humanity and make sure that you remind yourself that he's just a 17-year-old kid who's looking for an escape and looking to find himself. And that's all,
Trey touched on that you sort of worked on the character together, developed it. What sort of things do you look at and you think, that was a bit that I was able to contribute towards the development of this character?
Those small little things. I mean, mostly like the black stuff. the conversation was like, what would it sound like, you know, because he wrote that monologue Sterling has and the version of it that his dad would have said. And I was like, but you know, maybe his dad would be like, that big head of yours. So, you know, small little details that kind of make it sound familiar to our experiences and just our relationships with my sister and the pressures, the race aspect of high school, or like things that are being said to us. Those small little details just kind of just elevate, not elevated, but kind of made it more specific to our experiences.
As kind of touched on there, Emily, your character becomes the lead in the second half of the film. What was it like for you in the first half of the film? We sort of see you in the background, kind of building up. What was it like for you to then take the lead in the second half of the film? You're very much the emotional kind of heart of the film.
Well, it really worked the way that the story was told, I think, purely as a character, just because of what she's going through and kind of being like the child that isn't paid attention to as much and is maybe like the lost child in some ways, or that archetype at least, and being in the background of the first half kind of sets you up for that. And at least as a character, I felt that like I'm not really connected to the family as much, even though there's this whole off-screen life that does exist in which we all are together and have these family moments, like that it's not like I'm in the background all the time. Yeah. But I think what's really smart is that feeling is set up for the second half. So it feels like it felt really good to be able to not really be present and then kind of come in and, mm-hmm. and have this whole journey on my own. I mean, the journey with Tyler is about so much about like his parents too, mm-hmm. and mine, you see so much more freedom from them that they give me, like even the text that you send to me, Kath is worried, you're not at the beach house, where are you? It's just a text. It's not like pick up the phone, where are you, you know? So yeah, I like the contrast of the freedom versus the control.
What was it like shooting with Lucas Hedges? I'm now trying to imagine it isn't you. What was it like sort of like shooting with Lucas Hedges? Because it's such a, that the first half of the film is so intense. I think I went grey overnight watching that. When that second half, you get that sort of like, you can breathe again a little bit. And there's so much humour between the two of you. What was that relationship like to work on together? He is so funny together with you.
I know, he's so silly. It was really great. He's so unique, you know? He's like, the way he approaches scenes is so different from anybody else I've worked with, and he kind of tries to find like the weirdest way into it, which is really, it's good to work with actors like that because it kind of forces you to think in a different way, and he's just so funny. He's like the goofiest person. I don't think people really know that because he's always like so sad in his films, but he's really not. He's like such a silly boy. Yeah, he's fun to work with.
And for yourself, what was it like to sort of create this parental kind of role, and how do you sort of as like a family create something that looks so authentic on screen?
Sterling, for me, I felt what you felt when you walked in the room, which is an immediate chemistry with these people. I mean, I think as soon as I got the role, and I think I might have been the last of the four of us. I think I had just accepted with my agent, and all of a sudden I had texts from mm-hmm. them on my phone. And I think that would probably match Catherine's journey mm-hmm. Into a family that existed. But just such a welcome immediately, like they were waiting for this person to be cast so they could finish this, mm-hmm. so they could know what they were and who they were. It was like they were like sitting there like, is she going to do this? Who's going to do it? And mm-hmm. I just felt like an immediate like, okay, I guess I haven't met them. I know who they are, but now I'm family. And I felt that way when I met them. And I think that really parallels what she must have felt in terms of the need that this mm-hmm. group of people had for a mother. And her probably need to do that, to play that role. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it seems like she had a choice. It was a choice. Do I want to be the mother in this family? Mm-hmm. She had that moment. And what I love about the film is it seems that she has to make that choice again by the end. And she chooses to make it. Mm-hmm. I was like thinking at that last scene when she goes and visits you in the jail cell. Yeah. It's like, you know, and then, you know, that happens even before, right? I think it's before she takes your hand in the room. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so I think you see this character, you learn in the movie that she had to make a choice, and then you see her make it again, mm-hmm. which I think is the beauty of the film and what family is and forgiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. What was your question?
Well, I suppose a fresh one for you too. What was it like creating that father-son relationship? Because that is incredibly intense, even sort of the workouts, the conversations that are had. How did you sort of develop that relationship together?
It started when we had a conversation. We met in Los Angeles and sat down for lunch with each other. And he was coming, he was training for his wrestling. He's eating like 3,000 calories, getting bulked up, you know, swole. And I didn't know if this was something that I wanted to do. You know, I didn't know if I could watch a movie where a young black man takes a woman's life. And then, as beautiful as I thought the second half of the movie was, I was like, can I follow it? Can I follow it through to the end? Or am I sort of stuck in this place? And, you know, Kelvin and I talked about it. I was like, dude, this is really an intense thing, you know, and I get artistically the intrigue of the challenge, but like once we put it out into the world, it's sort of like not yours anymore, and like there could be, you know, some very differing responses to it, right? And I think ultimately the fear that I had, I thought was the fear that, that Ronald would have for Tyler in the film, and that maybe that was a reason to do it instead of not doing it, right? And Calvin is such a, I mean this in the best way, but he's such a sweet man, and is so, gives his all to it, and I could see that from just our meeting. And then when we got on set, and this is to a person, but like, I think I'm a very inquisitive person, so I ask a lot of questions, because I find like that questions allow me, allow us to get to know each other when people are open to answering them. And like, I try to be the change that I want to see in the world, so if anybody asks me something, I'm just like, and then people will kind of like, with me. And so that's kind of what happened with us. And like every time I came back to Florida, because I was going back and forth between California and Florida shooting, like it was always just like, what's up, dude? What's going on? And we would have these moments of just like checking in, and he'd be like, oh man, this is crazy, but this is good. And like, I don't know if I'm doing good. I'm like, you're doing great. And he's like, I don't know, man. I don't know what to do. And so, but like, it was there was a sense of mutual respect and like a joy to be in each other's presence, because I'm not the dude who feels like I have to replicate exactly what happens on screen in real life. Like, I think that would have been a little bit too different strokes for different folks. That's not necessarily the way that I work. I need you to know that I'm available and open to play, right? And I think once we create that sort of environment, then when it's time to focus, you focus and lock into the character. At least that's kind of how I approach it. But I think the writing was so good, and I have my own personal experiences of what it means to be black in America and being told you got to be twice as good to get half as far. And believing it.
Still believing it.
It, right? And so that it wasn't hard to say it to Tyler, you know, because there's a worry and a concern that you have for your children, and you want the best for them. And you try to arm them with what you think they need to succeed. And then so the caveat is, like, you don't even recognize. Like, I don't think that Ronald was even cognizant of the fact that he wasn't creating a dialogue with his child. He was just telling him. Like, he's sort of an individual who's kind of taking the air out of the room. And this is, however he sees it, is how it's going to go. And then we have a tragedy that we experience, and he's sort of forced into another way of being. And the conversation with his wife, and just recognizing that, like, I firmly believe that we all do the best that we know how to until we know how to do better. You know what I'm saying? And it's really, I don't think I would have taken the job if the scene didn't exist between Emily and Ronald in the second half, because I'm edified in recognizing that this man may have learned a different way of being with his children.
One thing I really took away from the film on a kind of personal level, recently had a family member, you know, nothing like the film, had a run-in with the law, you know, was facing court and stuff like that. And it was fascinating to watch that, because I could see what was going on with the parents, which was something I could see that happened with my parents, and something had gone on within our family. And it was that, it was making me think about, you know, when we see a lot of these movies about people going to court, and we know what's like in America, you know, with incarceration and the rates and the oppression that goes on there. And that discussion of how can we still love people that do something so terrible, that cause so much damage to the loved ones and to the wider circles. And it feels like this film is having a conversation and getting people to think in a way that you don't often see with crime dramas, but every time it's black and white. With here, it's like, we've seen the consequences, and what happens in that first half is usually the end of the film.
Right.
Here's what happens afterwards. How do we continue on? How do we reconcile with that? What was that conversations like for yourselves with that second half of the film, and what this film kind of means in a wider scale, perhaps in America and globally?
You know, it's interesting. I was so focused on how we are going to deal with still, you know, seeing the humanity of a black man after the crime.
Mm-hmm.
That I didn't, I think this is what, this film, watching this film was surprising and healing for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, I think, where Trey comes in and his genius comes
yeah.
in. Because I just didn't know how we were going to get past it. And I think that's also maybe just the actress trying to go down the journey, thinking I'm going down a journey that really my character is going down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, how are we going to get past this?
Yeah.
And so I think what the family goes through is probably kind of a microcosm of like what I think our society goes through
mm-hmm.
when our children are just from being children are find themselves ruined. It's devastating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's devastates me now, you know, and how do the other children survive the loss
yeah.
of their brothers and sisters? How do the parents keep going? How do the relationships keep going? And I think he took time to show how his life still matters
mm-hmm.
after, you know. I think he was really able to, I mean, and I was, you know, it's just occurring to me, I was so worried about it being a black boy.
Mm-hmm.
But now, in this moment, because you said that, I feel so kind of grateful because now you actually see a black boy who committed a crime, but you never lose the humanity. And so I'm
mm-hmm.
going to say this because in your answer earlier, you were talking about adding kind of the African-American stuff. But another thing you really added, which is the most important thing, is the humanity of a person that commits this crime. I mean, that's what you were focused on when you were shooting this, was how do you still recognize me as a human being that deserves love? Like, that was the challenge.
Yeah.
You did it. And I think because we've seen audience members stay with him and
yeah.
us and this family and care
mm-hmm.
by their performances, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't see that I'm pointing at these actors. You know, I think because we were able to do that, it's so important that this family is black. Because we've heard white people in these screenings
yeah.
be able to stay with them and
yeah.
feel and be sad and moved
mm-hmm.
and emotionally connected to what happens to them after
yeah.
and see themselves in us after. And I think that's what we need in America and the world right now.
What well, kind of people's reactions to your character, for example, as you say, I watched it and I thought, so that is a most heinous act, but your heart breaks, you think, that's a life sentence for someone so young,
I
for
know.
Something so horrible, for a mistake, but I'm still with this person. What was that like? How have people reached out and reacted to you? Was there a risk of, like, I've taken on a person here that's going to do something horrible? Are people going to conflate the two, perhaps?
Yeah, I mean, everyone, we were all scared going into it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, literally everyone was scared. But it's been really refreshing and moving, and just to see, like, the other night, we finished the screening and someone came up to me and she was telling me about her son and her relationship with her son and how his experiences, and he's trying to find his voice through his music, and he's out late and he's doing these things and she's not really sure how to communicate with him as a parent. And, you know, it just seeing her go, well, I'm going to support him, I'm going to love him, and I'm going to just give him the attention he deserves, and hopefully I won't be afraid of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think these types of things make me feel like, okay, well, the communication aspect between a parent and a child is growing and it's changing and people are seeing, and I don't know what I'm saying, but you know. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
No, I think this is, like, to clarify that point, like, I do think, and I hope that this movie furthers this, and that you have as much to learn from your children as they do from you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there needs to be the space for a dialogue. Like, when he comes to Emily and he's like, you know, tell me what's going on in your life.
Right.
Like, it was born out of, like, necessity, because he ain't had nobody else to talk to.
Yeah.
But, like, it was like, yo, we, like, this is a conversation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not a one-way street.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a conversation that you have. And there's still lines of demarcation. You're still a parent. You're still a child. But, like, at the end of the day, like, when your voice feels heard and appreciated, then maybe you don't feel like you have to go off and do shit on your own.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That you have to take matters into your own hand in a way that becomes really, really tragic. The other thing I wanted to add to it, too, in terms of taking on these roles, is that there's a fear that some actors can fall into about wondering if you will ultimately be liked. And I think to a person, we didn't fall into that trap. I think a teacher of mine once told me, is like, you're not going to be liked all the time, but what you want is for the audience to understand.
Yeah, that's right.
Do they understand why you made the choices that you made? And as long as you communicate that clearly, you've done your job, right? And I think, because if you get caught up in, like, if they like me or whatnot, then you play kind of a losing game, because not everybody going to like you. Like, it's going to be
not everybody is likable.
Not everybody is likable, you know what I'm saying? But if you can understand, that's the biggest goal, I think.
Perfect. Thank you so much, guys. Yeah, I really appreciate it. One of the best films of the year, so
thank you so much.
At time of like recording, by the time this drops, I'll have thankfully seen it. It was announced today that Waves will be coming to the London Film Festival, so I'll finally get the chance to see it there. I mean, it seems to be getting incredible reviews at the moment, and I'm trying to go in as blind as possible to this one. I know I'm going to enjoy it. But I've noticed that you've got a role in this film. Can you tease a little bit about your role and what we can maybe look forward to with Waves?
It will. My role is very easy to tease because it's one line. Here's what happened. I was on my way up to Northern California to shoot this film that, you know, that I have coming out, and it's a big, heavy role with a lot of, like, I'm pulling a lot of weight, and Trey reaches out to me, and he's shooting Waves in Florida, and he says, can you fly down to shoot for one day? And I'm like, I'm already in San Francisco. I have 3 days off before I have to go to the set. He said, I can send a car for you early tomorrow morning. And if you get on a plane, then you can do costume and wardrobe tomorrow. And then you can shoot that. And then you can travel back the next day. Could you? And I had read the script. And I have to say, reading the script, just as a sidebar, I had never read anything like it. I had never experienced anything like it. It just blew me away. And I thought I knew what he wanted me to do. And I said, the English teacher? And he said, yes. Because this was a teacher who'd been kind of inspirational to him when he was young. And at the time, it had two lines. After he had to cut the movie from 2 hours and 15 minutes, I had one line. But it was the perfect line. And the perfect little flash of me walking across a scene. I was a lucky charm. He wanted me to come and do it and be a part of it, but I didn't belong in that film. I was getting ready to go make a film that I own. So it's like he asked me to do that. I did it. We had a wonderful time. I got to meet all the kids. It was just the perfect, for me, little piece. I think the best thing I could tell you about the Waves experience is that Robin and I, his mother and I, we're such yentas. We both went to Telluride, and then we both went to Toronto because it's like she was having a grandbaby, and we wanted to be there for the birth, right? And the first time we saw it, it's audacious is such a good word. People use that word about it. And we were nervous about it. We knew he was going to do it, but we were nervous. It was quite an endeavor. So the first time we saw it, we were both so nervous. I found that I was with the audience breathing together, and we were all crying at the same place, and we were all gasping at the same place. And it was, again, a surreal experience. And I was just, I couldn't even speak after it was over. Okay, the second time I went to see it, it was in a theater with 360 sound. That was the most visceral experience I can remember ever in a film. I felt that the audience was like an organism. And we were all breathing together and experiencing this together. It's like voyeurism. There really is a sense that you are watching these lives. Kind of, there was some of that in Krisha. There was some of that in It Comes at Night. He is a genius at so many things, but one of the things that you can't ever miss, casting. The people that he chose to be these people, having read the script when I first saw them as the person, they were the exact right person for that role, exactly right. And they formed a family just like we did. And when you see them standing up at Q&As and they're hanging all over each other and they're teasing each other and they're he made them into a family. And I won't see anything more about it except that it's a real ride. And for me, it's an important film.
I can't wait to see it. You've got me excited. I've avoided the trailer. I've avoided the reviews. I've just seen the good buzz. So a couple more weeks and I'll finally get the chance to see it. So it was such a hype when it was like, when they announced the original film festival lineup, and I was like, oh, why isn't Waves in there? And then today they went, here it is, just a few weeks later. So I knew
it was going to be, but we weren't allowed to tell anyone. So it was like, just don't say anything, don't indicate anything. Now, I do want to say this, and you can put this in or put or leave this out, whatever you like. What I'm finding in reading the reviews, there are two very strong pools of experience in this film. One dark and one light. And a lot of people get one and are kind of eh about the other. For people who have really lived and really allowed themselves to feel things deeply and allowed themselves to go places emotionally, I think when you read a review where they got both, that's the perspective of a person who has both of those in their experience, and they can see it when they know it when they see it. I think some people, they've not gone near one part of that life experience or the other, and so they resonate really strongly to one half of the film and a little less to the other. Nothing wrong with that. It's working when it works like that. But just keep your eyes open and see if you run into that situation with people that you know who see it.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.